So, retrospectors, what historical events are we ticking off on this week's run of Today in History?
Well, Monday is the anniversary of the day Roger first published his famous thesaurus.
Then on Tuesday, we say happy birthday, Mr. Potato Head.
On Wednesday, the extraordinary stories of the child soldiers who fought in the American Civil War.
On Thursday, how King James changed the word of God.
And on Friday, what did spam emails look like in 1978?
We discuss this and more on Today in History with the retrospectors. 10 minutes every weekday, wherever you get your podcasts.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello everyone, welcome to FF1S, except this isn't FF1S because there's no F1 going on. And as we all know, when there isn't a race, nothing happens in Formula 1. So instead, we're going to bring you something even better than Formula 1, skiing. Terry, you a fan?
I have not been skiing.
Okay, snowboarding.
Not since the Schumacher accident.
Snowboarding, luge.
I like the idea of luge because I like the look of the suits. I once went ice skating in Edinburgh and fell over after 5 minutes. So that's my winter sports career.
Good. Well, I think that makes us about as qualified to talk about skiing as we are for Formula One. But actually, it's not going to be us talking about it. We're going to hand over to one of our reserve cheekers, Ollie Peart. Ollie got very bored of sitting in his cupboard waiting for Chica to be ill or on holiday. So he's done his own podcast, which is about skiing and ski culture specifically. I'm not entirely sure what that means.
Oh, I know a lot about ski culture. It's your big jumpers, your log cabins, your skinny women. And you know what's very, popular in ski lodges last year?
COVID.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's another podcast about the coronavirus. Get lots of very middle-class people in a sweaty room in the Alps and we'll have to stay in our flats for a year. Yeah. That's what it's about.
Yeah, so it's that, but in podcast form.
Eddie the Eagle Edwards coughing on people.
Anyway, these are the highlights of the first season of The Apres. If you like them, go give them a subscribe and a follow. If you don't, delete this and wait for us to come back and talk nonsense about fast cars and rich idiots.
My name is Ollie Peart and this is...
Tim Warwood.
Can you believe he's the famous one?
Yeah, I can. Better looking as well. Probably richer.
You've got three kids, you're definitely not richer. And this is The Apres, where we celebrate everything that happens after the skiing takes place. This week...
We pick our favourite moments from the series, including...
Despite the fact our lives could be so divergent, we don't even know each other. And yet that drop is going to affect us as one.
Vic Hope chooses her favourite tracks for the ultimate Apres experience. And...
I got about 30 seconds in to Thunderstruck and was like... And this thing's like...
Ski Sunday's Ed Lee reveals his dark side.
If you've ever dreamed of an Alpine ski holiday... and are wondering where to start, then this is the show for you. The once snowy mountains will be nothing more than grassy hills full of goats and golfers. The sound of the shred will be replaced by Austrian yodelers telling everyone to eat mints or whatever. As the Earth continues on its cosmic merry-go-round, our time in the log cabin for this series must come to an end. But before it does, we're going to take one last swig from the sugar-crusted memory bottle and regurgitate some of our best bits. So, Tim, what surprised you this series?
I'll tell you right now, spring straight in. It's the ingenuity of our guests. It's the fact that these people love the mountains so much. They love their skiing and snowboarding so much, they'll go to such extreme lengths to do it. New dad, Jamie Nichols... springs to mind first and foremost, locked down at home in Guildford, as far away from any snow as you can possibly get. He builds a mountain in his back garden, well, off the roof of his new gym. do you remember this? Lay down a couple of 8x4 sheets, went round the local dry slope, got a couple of bits of the dry slope mat in, and then created this crazy little downhill drop-in with a rail to session all of his tricks, and it was a work of art. His neighbours must have thought he was absolutely crackers.
Yeah, it's full on. I love it. It's like, you know, the best I've got to putting together some kind of lockdown gym is buying some dumbbells. And he's basically bought and put together some kind of like mountain piece. He's actually gone and built another one. I don't know if you've seen this on his Instagram, but he's bought another one or made another one.
He got some professional scaffolders to build it because this one's so big, he couldn't have built the frame himself. So
yeah,
he's enlisted Guildford's finest scaffolders to come and erect a Mount Guildford at the back of somebody's workshop. But do you know what? Above all that, I think the lengths that Phil Young went to go snowboarding, for me, were nothing short of remarkable. The guy saw snowboarding in a magazine and decided to copy it by tea leafing a couple of plywood sheets and a tin of boat varnish from his local B&Q.
I'm going to play a bit of that for you in our chairlift chat. This is the part of the show where we jump on the chairlift with our guest and we have a little natter. So here's Phil Young.
So we were going on a ski trip with the school, and we had just found out about snowboarding. A friend of mine, a guy called Darren Robinson, he'd bought a magazine in, and it was like a trade show magazine. It had a picture of a guy on a snowboard. And we were like, what the fuck is that thing? We'd never seen it. It was like in the 80s sometime. It was like, what is that? It's surfing on snow. And we were skateboarders at the time. It's like, we've got to have ourselves some of that. So we were also part-timing at Do It All, the hardware store.
Yeah, the one.
Which is like a bit like B&Q or Homebase. We're scouring around Do It All, and we got all this 8x4 plywood, and we shoved it out the back next to the skip during the day. And we're like, oh, look, let's get some of that. And then we got some boat varnish, and we like shoved that around the back of the skip, and then we got some angle beading. You know the stuff that I think you put it on the side of shelves, or maybe there's
when expensive uncle angle beading was is expensive.
Not when you're working at doing it. And someone leaves the warehouse door open, it ain't that expensive, Ollie. Let me tell you about that.
Yeah.
So we got that and some paint, and we came back late at night, scattered out the air, and we got it in the back of the van or someone's car or something like that. I was like, right, let's make some snowboards and take them on our ski trip that we're going to in next week or something like that. So we're like, okay, well, what? So we just had this picture. It was one picture of a snowboard in this French magazine, and we're like, well, it's clearly this, isn't it? And someone found another picture of a Burton cruiser, a Burton Safari, and it had fins on it. So there was two fins. So we cut out fins. We got a sheet of metal or something. We cut these fins out of the side and like a keel. Do you remember the first snowboards that had a little keel in it?
Yeah.
A tiny little thing. I don't know what they were supposed to do. Anyway, so
I think just to keep the whole thing going straight. Yeah,
who
wasn't
knows,
it?
Man?
Yeah.
Who knows? It was ridiculous. We spent more time doing the graphics, to be fair.
How old were you at this time? How old are you?
16.
Yeah.
Something.
Okay.
My friend had got some walking boots, some Coflash walking boots that I think he'd snuck out of the school as well. I had a pair of roller skates that. That was it, red and white roller skates. But I did also have the inserts, the liners of my ski boots. So I'm thinking, okay, well, look, what I can do is use the liners of my ski boots, but kind of cut the toe off the roller skate boots. So I took the roller skate and just screw the roller skate boots onto the top of the snowboard, put my inners in the inside and just lace it all up nice and tight. I thought, Kushti, we'll have some of that. So we got, I don't know how we got them there. He must have wrapped them up in bubble wrap or something like that.
Oh, my God.
Stuck them on the coach. We went to Courmayeur, just underneath Mont Blanc. Anyway,
the school teachers must have thought you were mad.
I've no idea. I don't think they even knew, man.
We
just had these things. They're like, what's that? What's that, young? I was like, nothing, sir. Nothing. Get in the coach. One day it was a powder day, and we're like, okay, we're gonna have some of this, right? We got the lift, and then the next lift, then we got, like, you know, they have the top cable car that doesn't really go that often.
Yeah.
And you get all the hardcore dudes in crampons and ropes and transceivers and peeps going up. And then us three lads from Essex. You know, and there was this black kid and these two guys, and we were just laughing. And they were like, hey, bonjour.
Anglais.
Yeah. So we got up to the top, and we got out, and all these people. It's a bit of a crowd, to be fair.
I'm not surprised. I am not surprised.
What are these lads doing? Darren strapped up. He found some dude who had some winter stick, but it was like a fiberglass surfboard with rubber straps. So he was fine. He'd scored something in the town.
Oh, right.
My other friend had something similar. He had the Coflash boots type thing. So they had strapped up. I put my board down to strap up, and the fucker went off down the mountain without me. Seriously. It just like, what? Where's it gone? And I was like running down, you know, waist deep powder to try and catch up with this board, because it clearly worked. It must have been the boat varnish, I was thinking. So it'd gone like about 50 metres, 100 metres or something like that. Ran down after it. It was greeted with much hilarity by the locals, as I'm sure you can imagine. But anyway, we got up, we strapped this thing down, and by the time we got to the bottom, we could actually snowboard on these things. We could get turns in. Not to mention that actually halfway down the mountain, my screws from my back foot actually came off. So I was one-footed, but there was still some screws kind of stuck up in the thing, so I could grip on it a little bit. But it was very entertaining. And we got down. I was like, man, I'm all over this. I went home and was reading RAD, a skateboard magazine at the time, and someone was selling a snowboard. And I've only been skiing once since then, for one afternoon, and that was only for a laugh. It was like snowboarding ever since.
What a way to get into snowboarding. And boat varnish.
It's a hidden secret.
Yeah, and just whack around the bottom with some boards.
That was TV presenter Phil Young there, and you join us now, still on the chairlift, as we are whisked effortlessly up the mountain in this carefully maintained podcast illusion, of course. And this is where we gleaned some delightful confessions from some unexpected places.
For example, it's remarkable how many presenters of Ski Sunday are just a little bit filthy after hours, including you, Tim. This is Ed Lee, and afterwards, Shemi Alcott. I want to ask you about that Air Guitar Championship thing, because I was wikiing you. I want to know about Satan Whoppercock.
What, and how I got a job on the BBC after doing that?
I just want to know. I just want you to tell me everything there is to know about Satan Whoppercock. I want to know who this alter ego is.
It started off, Matt Barr, the guy who does another podcast that I'm sure a lot of anyone who's into action sports will know, the Looking Sideways podcast. We worked at White Lines together, and he got a commission from The Guardian one week to go and seek out. He said, Ed, they've asked me to go and cover the Air Guitar Championships. Just in case it's rubbish, do you want to come along and just get up there and do something to make it entertaining so I've got something to write about? I was like, oh yeah, definitely. So I was pretty dab hand with a sewing machine back in the day, and I made myself an Evel Knievel suit, like an all-in-one. I went along in my Evel Knievel suit, and there were some really good people there. Like, they'd got some good moves. I think they were called Bum BN3, which is like the Brighton postcode, which is where we were living, and the event was held that year. But I went out, did Don't Fear the Reaper by the Blue Oyster Cult, and got joint first with them. And I decided never again, I was going to win this. So in the year following, I developed the character, Satan Whoppercock, and I didn't get beaten again.
How do you win an Air Guitar Championship? There's no skill there, surely. You're just arsing around, throwing your hands in the air, jumping up and down.
So we'll start with the stage prep. I built a 9-foot penis with a detachable bell end in the back garden. Took me 3 months out of paper mache, chicken wire and wood. The fire extinguisher cost me 75 quid from a hokey ex-fireman, and I didn't have enough money to test it, so I just rigged it up to the detachable bell end. The shaft split in half. So those are the props that we're talking about. I'd met another hokey guy on a lay-by on the M40 and bought a gerb off him, an indoor firework, that again I didn't test until I lit it about 2 metres away from the front row of the audience. That was... Someone got a bit burned. Like, there were some eyebrows went missing there.
Oh, my God.
Like, I've got a mate's mum to quilt the shoulder pads on the red pleather outfit. I had spikes coming off it. I melted 2 dildos onto an Alice band for horns. One of those snapped off and started hitting me in the face in the second year. It was like the start of Lock, Stock and 2 Smoking Barrels. When you know when he gets beaten to death with the dildo? It was horrific. I got about 30 seconds in to Thunderstruck and was like, da-la-la-la, and this thing's like... It was so painful. I was like, I'm not going to... And then it broke off and shot into the audience. And I never found it. But then the actual moves, like, I had a couple of moves that, like, I've got very long tongue. Like, I can pick my nose and touch the bottom of my chin with my tongue. So that kind of gives disgusting. It the Alice Cooper feel. And I'd cut a lot of the music together. So I'd have Bon Jovi Slippery When Wet to bring me out of the penis. I'd have, in the biggest one, the last year, I used Led Zeppelin. A Whole Lot of Love. So the penis would shake as it reared up close to its climax, and then it was cut in with Frankie Goes to Hollywood. Relax, don't do it. Lord! And then I had my wife-to-be working the fire extinguisher, and we hadn't tested it, and this jet arced out of the top of the penis and hit the roof of the stage. Then she said, lean forward. So I leant forward a bit, and the second one arced out into the crowd, hit my aunt, in fact, who uttered the immortal words to my mum, Edward's just jizzed on me. Then I leant back, and the last of the fire extinguisher just dribbled down the front, and then I smashed open the penis and lathered myself around in it. But the hardest part of all of it, you built all of that and you've done all of that. My finishing move was the face drop, and I used this in conjunction with the old James Brown, I'm injured, and someone would come out with my cloak and then put it round me and kind of walk me off stage, but then I'd throw the cloak off and come out and do the finale. But the face drop, you swing the guitar around, catch it behind your head, you're then playing the guitar behind your head, kind of AC/DC style, and then you fall forwards onto your face, but you use your elbows, which are poking out, to break your fall and try and tuck your face in. But I gave myself a good knock a couple of times. Like, I wasn't acting when I got carried off.
So there was no encore. You didn't go back on afterwards all like smooth, thrown off the thing.
But I dislocated, I'll just show you quickly, these are clavicles.
Oh god, what is that? Looks like a thumb growing out of your shoulder.
Yeah, my collarbones aren't attached to my shoulders anymore, and I did that in late 2002, I think. Yeah, when your head's not attached to your body properly anymore, you can't spend 3 minutes headbanging at speed. So,
yeah,
I retired.
You had to give up.
Yeah, yeah. Undefeated.
Yeah, so you had to give up air guitaring because it was more detrimental to your health than snowboarding.
Okay, I'm going to give a story that turns into like a top tip for people. In ski racing, it's quite a big deal to make the bib drawer, and I'd never made one before. And I went to St. Anton, which is obviously full of Brits, and I made this bib drawer, which meant that I was one of the top 10 in the training runs, and I got to go on stage, and they did this massive announcement, and I went on stage, and I have two ways of reacting to adrenaline and fear, and this time I just saw these people like chanting my name. I don't even think they were chanting my name. I think they were asking for more shots, but whatever. And I was like, oh my God, what do I do? What do I do? I know what I do. I pull up my top. Oh my God, and my first. And it turns out, Ollie, this is actually my last ever bib draw. This is the only bib draw that I ever qualified for. And what did I do? I freaked out on stage, did these like stupid moves and lifted up my top and showed everyone. I mean, there's nothing to see, but
There's got to be some psychological thing there. Deep-seated psychological.
Oh my God. As I was doing it, I got to nipple height and I knew what was happening. And I was like, don't do it, Shemi, don't do it. Oh God, you've done it. Because of that, I have this reputation of being quite wild, which is absolutely not true.
She was good, wasn't she?
She was good. She did actually do the shirt lifting to us. Shirt lifting sounds like she's some old bloke in a park. But she did do it. But she did also have a t-shirt on underneath. Some kind of weird sort of nervous energy there as to the reason she does that. I might start doing it.
And the best thing is that that wasn't even the main story.
No.
That was the precursor to the story that she told us. And she just didn't think that was a very good one to tell.
They're full on, these Ski Sunday presenters. And Satan Whoppercock.
Well, yeah, your snowboarding equivalent of Spinal Tap. Just picture the papier-mâché.
It's the fire extinguisher. Yeah. It's that out of the tip that gets me.
Right then, let's get serious. Katie Ormerod and Jamie Nichols spoke to us about the pressures on them both when competing, as Katie told us on the chairlift.
I actually think I remember seeing some comments around that time where people were saying, you know, like, it wouldn't be possible for a woman to do a double cork. And it was, you know, I wanted to prove them wrong, obviously, because, you know, women can do anything and I'm a massive believer.
Wow, hang on. So before the double cork, you saw comments, someone saying it's not possible for a woman to do a double cork.
Yeah, like that. I feel like the theme, you know, like, and I went and did it, and yeah, it was amazing. Like, I went out there, we literally had 2 days to get it done. We took a filmer, and no one else knew that I was going to do it, and it was in the middle of my GCSEs as well, which is pretty crazy. And yeah, I did it, and it was the best feeling ever. Like, I just felt on top of the world. Yeah, when I landed that.
At that point, you were well known in the UK scene, but you had the backing of Red Bull, and they were there filming, like you said, and they pumped out this film, and of course Red Bull were able to announce it to the world there and then, and all of a sudden it was like, oh my God, who is this 16-year-old girl that's just shunned her maths GCSE to go and put this trick down? How was that, like, all of a sudden everybody knew who you were? How did you handle that pressure?
Oh, it was crazy. Like, it was really great because I knew I wanted to just take snowboarding to the highest level I could, and I really wanted to get those, like, big invites to the contest, but it's so hard when you're young and no one knows who you are, and that really kind of, like, kick-started, I guess, like, my professional career in the big contest. I started getting the invites then. Look how far women's snowboarding's come, like, in the last 10 years, like, it's progressed dramatically. It's so exciting to see where it's going. So yeah, it's really cool that, you know, I was able to start that, and now there's other girls sending it, and we just keep progressing. Like, it's so exciting to see, because yeah, girls are amazing and can do anything. So yeah, just want to keep proving everyone wrong.
Yeah. But do you feel like that's leveling up a bit now? Do you feel like you're getting less of that now?
No, I'm actually lucky. I don't really see too much of that anymore. So yeah, I'm hoping that people see that, you know, like, we're all training, we're all on the same courses and the same jumps as the guys, and we're all progressing and stepping it up. So yeah, it's just good that we are doing that. But yeah, it's annoying when people feel that they can say these negative things to someone that they don't even know. Like, it's really frustrating. And I guess that's one of the negatives about social media, that people do have the right, like, well, they think they have the right to, like, say what they want, even if it's negative and could hurt someone. But yeah, ultimately, you know, it's good that the girls are sending it and keep pushing the boundaries of what women can do on a snowboard.
You know, it looked to me like you guys were having the time of your life. It just looked like so much fun. And I thought, man, I just want to be there. I want to be with these people and I want to experience all of that.
That's the beauty of, like, social media and things like that. It shows all the good bits, but you don't see all the stuff behind closed doors where the pressures and the financial situation, like, I mean, for snowboarders to go to an Olympics, it's a very costly thing. And UK sport is very good, and they do, you know, but it barely, I mean, if you've got a house and you're paying a mortgage and you're paying bills at home, that covers pretty much that. And then what do you have? You have your sponsors to try and get you around the world, and it costs a lot of money. And the thing is, you got that kind of pressure on you. You've got results pressure, and you've got all this going on, and it's just all happening in your head and stuff. And it's just, I don't know, it feels really sad to say, but like Sochi, the lead up to Sochi was never about, it wasn't like it is now. Like, it was I barely qualified for Sochi, by the way. So, like, it was with the skin of my teeth because at the last few events, I decided, I want to go. And I didn't really take much notice of it. I was, you know, doing Nike projects. I was doing lots of filming and stuff, and I was really enjoying it. And I was like, look, like, I'm just going to try and do it. So the last three events happened on the lead up to Sochi. I managed to scrape in and qualify. Really, like, unorganized. And then I did the Olympics and stuff, and it was amazing. Like, got a huge buzz off it, kind of threw my name out there to, like, kind of a little, like, more than it had, like, more than it had, you know, previously, obviously, because it's the Olympics. And then after that was when it just went, so it just went like a sharp, like, nosedive, like, down. Like, I just felt rubbish. I felt like my creativity when I was riding had gone. Like, I really felt, just didn't feel creative anymore. I did four years where I just felt like I didn't know what to do with myself and my snowboard career. I was really struggling. It's like, do I do another Olympics and do I not? And it basically, if anything, it kind of ruined 4 years of my snowboard career, I feel like, because I just focused everything onto that, and I kind of do, I don't know why. It's like almost if you're with a manipulative girlfriend and everybody outside is telling you it's not good for you, and you can't see it. And it took me a while to see it. It took me till after Pyeongchang to see it. And I know from everybody seeing it from the outside, it looks amazing, but really it's not that great. I mean, you stood at the top of a course in Quebec, it's icy and it's minus 20. Like, why would you want to be there? I don't. like you're in Russia and you're like, it's too cold to run the lifts, but we'll just make you hike up, it's fine, and you can, you know, stand at the top freezing and your face is literally like ice, and you're there like having to perform triple corks. It's like, nah, like after the last layer I'm done. This is not for me anymore. So that's why I walked away, not only for, you know, myself, and because I wanted to do other stuff, but for my mental health too. I just, it wasn't right for me, and I couldn't cope with it, to be honest.
But you're in a good place now.
In a good place now, yeah. But I mean, Jen's a mate, like my wife Jen's just been incredible, because she's actually like been with me on those massive highs and huge lows and helped me get back up, and you know, taught me to, you know, believe in myself and just follow your heart and do what you enjoy the most, whether it earns you money or not, just go out and enjoy it. So that's what I decided to do. And you know, snowboarding's not in a good way anyways. There's not really budget being flown around and sponsors like they were in the Nike days. I mean, they were the good days, but it's different now. It's totally different.
It's so great to hear that you're doing well now. You know, we all have our like ups and downs and stuff, but
exactly. And I'm not really a person that's that open about, I don't really tell, and this is the problem, isn't it? It's like, if you're not open and you don't talk to people about stuff like these low points, is, you know, God forbid anything happens, but you don't, like, it's falling in that trap and not speaking. And obviously I think now, and I've lost, you know, I've lost friends as well who have not reached out, and I thought they were absolutely okay, like friends that don't snowboard, but friends like, and it's hard, man. Like, you definitely, it's good to speak out, and I believe, you know, I try and do a lot now, like in supporting people, and just even if I haven't heard from someone in so long, and just reach out and ask if they're okay, because I think it's important.
That was actually a really fascinating chat with Jamie. It's such a surprise, because he's a really sort of bubbly, like, funny chap. And you just don't expect that from people in that kind of position. So it was really fascinating.
Yeah, real pleasure to have him on. Right then, finally, we do like to do some fun and games. And out of everyone that came onto the podcast, I think Vic Hope provided our best playlist for The Slopes. And probably the only game that worked in the whole series.
What are you talking about? That's nonsense. All of the quizzes were brilliant. Do you know what, actually? Do you know how much time I spent? Well, I spend so much time on every single one of those quizzes. Like 15 minutes before you even jump on the call, Tim Warwood, typing away, tabbity tap, tap, tabbity tap, tap.
For at least 3 minutes.
And sometimes it doesn't come together. In the case of Shemi, right? She's not even from the place where she said she was from on her Wikipedia, which I hope's been changed. Nobody
God
probably changed
it. God damn it! Who made the internet all wrong?
I'm just saying, don't have a go at me, all right? I put a lot of work into that, a lot of effort.
Anyway, whatever. This is Vic Hope and her attempt to ski her way around Ollie's fiendish quiz before telling us the tracks that she listens to for that après life that we are all ever so missing right now.
Oh, would you look at that view? Can't see a thing. Still, there's only one way down, Vic, and that's through the slalom. There are 5 gates between you and a frosty pint at the bottom of the hill.
Yes, and to get to the bottom, you're going to need your wits about you. You need to be sharp, the master of detection.
You see, Vic, since our first episode, we've learnt that we do, in fact, have listeners.
Oh, wow.
And I love your astonishment. We want to get to know those listeners a little better. So, this is a missing words challenge.
Oh, okay.
To clear a gate, you need to guess the missing word in our genuine, these are genuine listener-submitted stories.
This is one of my stories. I once went what with Chris Akabusi?
Skinny dipping.
Went... feral.
No. Feral? No.
You know what he's like.
I once went snowboarding with Chris Akabusi.
No, he went feral. You get the idea,
okay.
Clearly. So Tim's going to be on hand with his exceptional commentary skills to describe how you take on each gate. Okay. So are you ready?
Yes. Oh, I love this. Okay.
Number one.
Yes.
I was bartering with a lifty in Bulgaria for a pair of goggles at 10 quid. He got bored and opened up his coat to reveal a blank.
Beaver in his pocket.
Oh, it's a nice star, but the... Oh, she's skied off and she's gone... Oh, she's snagged a ski and oh, it's gone horrible.
Oh, no.
She's missed the first gate.
The answer was pistol. He paid him 15 quid in the end. Question two.
Okay.
Front tooth knocked out by a what 1 hour after arriving in resort?
Beaver in my pocket.
She's made the same mistake twice, Tim.
Oh, she's missed the second gate. Oh, she's having a shocker.
It was a snowball. Question three. My first snowboard trip after my cancer treatment, brackets successfully finished, I had a tap on the shoulder at the top of the lift and it was my...
friend Chris Akabusi.
Close oncologist.
Oh, wow.
Oh, look at this. She's missed the gate. Gate three gone absolutely horribly wrong. On to gate four.
Got plastered on the first night, stood up on an upturned what? 3 holes in the base of my foot for a week.
Plug.
Correct!
Yay!
What a gate there. Look at this now. The speed really ramping up. She's in the green.
Wow. In your face, instructor in Austria.
Had a pretty low skill high speed wipeout / yard sale. Picked myself up and carried on. End of the day, realised my what was missing.
Beaver in my pocket.
And she's round the last gate. Oh, it's a terrible turn. And she ducks for the line. And oh, she's 19.
Oh.
That story was from gold medal winning Matthew Pinsent, by the way.
And what?
That you've just dissed there with your beaver in a pocket.
Friend of the show, might we add, Matthew Pinsent.
Sorry, Matthew.
The rower.
What was the right answer?
Watch.
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 Yeah. He got it back, still wears it.
Oh, fantastic. Tell you what, though, I feel like if you had a beaver in your pocket instead, not only could you tell the time, but think of the fun and the japes. Do you have a saying? Is it just in Newcastle, or is this a saying for everyone that you're wetter than Notta's pocket?
Because isn't that a sexual
I think
reference?
It might be, yeah. But just to check, I wasn't sure if it was a thing everyone said.
When I did the Olympic commentary and received 332 official Ofcom complaints...
Wow, what did you say?
One of them was for when I described one of the snowboarders being as loose as a wizard's sleeve.
Yeah, you can't say that. You can't say that, Tim. Tim, you can't say wizard's sleeve. Because you know why I know? Because I've done the same thing.
Oh, have you?
Yeah.
No.
You can't say that on air.
Can't say wizard's sleeve,
no. They don't like that.
Was this the naivety of knowing what it actually meant?
It was, I didn't know what it meant until...
Well, that's what I mean.
I just thought it was a thing people say, because it is loose, you know, wizard's sleeve.
I mean, it is a thing people say.
Wizard's sleeves are loose.
Spacious.
Fucking hell.
Voluminous.
Heading to the mountain without music in your ears or in your head is like raclette. Wrong. Each week... we like to dive into our guests' cranial R-price to pick out their top picks for the mountain, which will be added to our super duper mega playlist on Spotify.
Also, raclette's not wrong.
Raclette's lovely. It's really nice, actually.
Love a raclette.
Yeah.
Come on, it's just cheese and potatoes.
Yeah, that's nice.
Anyway, this is the part of the show where we ask you to pick your tracks for the mountain. So we're going to kick things off with the chairlift. Yeah. You're on the chairlift. And you're on your own because you couldn't get your ski pass to scan on the gate. Your mates are in front of you. What are you listening to on the way up?
So
to the top?
I've gone for Lizzo, Good As Hell, because she was one of the last gigs I went to before the lockdown. And it was Brixton Academy. And there was this general vibe that was probably the most euphoric I've ever experienced at a gig. It felt like I was in a church and people were speaking in tongues. We were in a year that was difficult already. People are feeling down. And what they needed right then was self-love. They needed to love themselves, to lift themselves up. And there was this feeling of ascension. And I just thought, you know what? A chairlift is taking you up. It's a very similar sensation. This for me is a moment that will stay with me. And it stays with me particularly because I miss live music so much. I'm holding it in my heart. So that's where my mind's going for this.
That is a sensational choice. I mean, everybody loves Lizzo, don't they?
She's
incredible.
Yeah.
She's honestly, the energy on the stage is insane. When she's twerking while playing her flute, you're like, I don't know what world I'm in, but I'm in Lizzo's world right now. And she makes you feel good. She reminds you that it's not about anyone. There's so many songs on that album, Because I Love You, that are so uplifting, especially as a woman. It's all about knowing yourself, loving yourself, not needing anyone else, celebrating yourself. It's a celebration. So I think when you're on your way up, because I always say that the best bit of everything is the bit just before. The best bit of a night out is the bit where you're doing pre-drinks with your mates just before you go out. The best bit of going home to see my family is on the train just as I pull into Newcastle and I see the bridge and I get excited. The best bit of a holiday is drinks in the airport before you get there. It's the anticipation. So I think there's a real vibe of anticipation in her music. It's that bit that she just captures an excitement, a lust for life that you're about to fully immerse yourself in, bask in, and that's what you're doing when you're in that chairlift.
So you're at the top, you're getting ready to ride down the hill. You need to change tracks now. What are you going for?
I really struggled here because there were so many different songs that I thought could be right. You want something atmospheric, don't you? Because that incredible view that you're taking in, all the sights and smells and sounds of rushing down that mountain. So do you want to go for something like The Knife, Heartbeats? Do you want to go maybe for like a bit of Jean-Jacques Smoothie, Two People, like fully atmospheric, like let's get dubby with this? Or do you want to go for something with like a real evocation in the lyrics, something that you can really listen to, that it's almost like it's articulating your time? So I thought, you know what, I'm gonna go with The Streets, and I'm gonna say let's push things forwards, because lyrically, like, remember how Mike Skinner was dissed when he first came out by so many radio DJs who were really like, oh, you know, it's not proper music, he made it in his bedroom, like he's not a real rapper. But no, it's poetry. He articulates things that we might have felt but never had the words to say so concisely that it is genius the way that he puts it together. And I think that song, you know, we're literally pushing forwards. He's talking about moving forwards in the way that we take on culture, the way that we listen to music. Like he's saying, fuck the major labels, let's do things in a different way. And I think that's the feeling that you want when you're sliding down a mountain, probably on my bum, let's face it.
This ain't the down, it's the upbeat, make it complete. So what's the story? Guaranteed accuracy, enhanced CD, latest technology.
I love The Streets so much. When I was growing up, I played the drums, and that was my go-to album to play to The Streets, just play the drums. Because that his debut album was just like the whole thing was like a little
original
story,
pirate material,
like,
yeah.
That was the one, yeah. And you've taken me back. I'm so pleased you brought that song. Yeah. That's so good. Right, you've had your day, your legs are shattered. You've been sliding down the hill on your ass all day. It's time to hit the bar. You're in the après. What are you asking for?
I'm asking for one song and one song only. And it is Groove Armada, Super Stylin'. Because when this is all over, the first thing I'm going to do when I get to dance with people that I don't even know, sweat with people I don't even know, they feel my sweat, I feel theirs. And we rise as one at the same moment, feeling the same thing, despite the fact our lives could be so divergent, we don't even know each other. And yet that drop is going to affect us as one. That is unity, and that is uplifting. The sun will be beating down on my skin. We'll all have cinnamon tans, and it's going to be beautiful. Just imagine it. Oh my gosh.
A big, sweaty, stinky.
I cannot wait. That song is the one.
Man, I can't wait to add these to the playlist.
Describe the folly douche right there. Perfect.
Well, that's about it. I've loved it.
It's been so nice to chat to you. I hope we get to go skiing, snowboarding sometime. I'm not the best person. I mean, I don't know if you got the impression from the things I've said and the stories that I've told that maybe I'm not that much fun to be around on the mountain, but I'm having a great time.
Just make sure you've got insurance if we're going together. That's all I'll say.
I will try the tricks. I'll try and do the tricks.
Hey, the title's the big giveaway of this podcast, Après, and that is what it is all about. And we cannot wait to go and indulge in a bit of Après with you, Vic Hope. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
That's been amazing.
Thank you for having me, guys. Thank you.
Yes. Vic Hope, everyone.
Yay.
Woo-hoo!
She was great. She was amazing. Well, that's it. I'm afraid that's the end of the series. I know. If you're new to the show, though, you can go and check out the whole series. You can just pick a guest and jump in whenever you fancy, even if it is summer.
Yeah, absolutely. And don't forget to make sure you are following the podcast. That way you'll hear our brand new episodes as soon as we come out of hibernation.
And we'll continue to share our favourite videos and lots of fun things over on our Instagram at @theaprepod. Thanks, Tim.
Thanks, Ollie.
And thanks to our producer, Matt Hill at Rethink Audio. We'll see you on the slopes in the winter.
Ooh. Have a nice summer. Bye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.